Before we get started this week, I want to tell you a little bit about Fly Vines. It's a really neat product here in Missoula, Montana. They're based right here. And, you know, being a football-based podcast, and there's probably quite a few of you who also enjoy fly fishing.
But yeah, to take a stretch there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's probably quite a few. But this is a really neat product.
It is. And so what I have in my hand right now, it's what they do is they take recycled fly line, which is kind of the chief environmental thing that comes out of being a fly fisherman. You have fly line and you don't really know what to do with it after it's done. So what Fly Vines does is they take the fly line and they weave them into bracelets, lanyards, keychains, and quite a few other products, mostly along those lines, but
and they're pretty fly looking.
They're pretty cool.
Yeah,
they're adjustable and just a nice little thing to let people know.
And durable. Think about how durable fly line is.
They last forever. Seriously.
Yeah. They look a little like the necklaces that the pitchers wear in baseball a lot. Oh. You see those luck necklaces that everybody's wearing. Uh-huh. They're kind of in that vein a little bit, but the nice braided look. They look stout.
The thing that I really like, I have a Fly Vines lanyard that I use usually season
for the games and
for
stuff
the games,
with your passes.
You know, you can put your get a little plastic pouch to put your ticket in, and then I have my Fly Vines lanyard that I use. So check them out, flyvines.com, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s, with your host, Adam Emmerich.
I've been known to pick up small women and chuck them between me and a snake. I've done that.
And Brandon Schultz.
So how do you feel about Peyton Manning being Mark Sanchez this week? But I'll wait for your answer on that.
Go Hawks. You're on a quest to own the West. Yippee-ki-yay. We make the ground shake all game day. 12 men. Yay's feeling it is vital. The Seahawks coming to take division titles. We are Coach Carroll because he's in.
Welcome, 12s. The beginning of the Seahawks season is only days away. Welcome to episode 37 of the Seahawkers podcast. You know, Sean Alexander, just hearing the number 37, he just didn't get enough run. I don't think he
was
gets the credit he deserves anymore, right?
He didn't get enough run? Was that a pun?
Oh, yeah. I guess it could be.
I don't know. So you think it he didn't get enough credit, not that maybe his career wasn't long enough?
I say that because of the way he left Seattle, you know, getting the big contract after the huge MVP season and having high expectations in a time really when running backs kind of start to go downhill anyway.
Yeah.
I think it just has left kind of a taste in people's mouth after he's gone that he didn't live up to what he could have been, and I don't really see it that way.
Yeah, I mean, he had a nice career.
I think, yeah.
I absolutely, he's one of the better backs we've had. I guess I never really had a big Sean Alexander connection.
No.
His person, I don't know, there's just something about him that just feels a little aloof, and I just never felt like, as a fan, as much as you can connect with a player that I ever connected with the guy. But anyway,
Anyway, here we are, episode 37. And today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about this Raiders game, you know, probably as much as most of us watched, which was, you know, what, after the first drive.
Right.
That was probably, probably good for most of us.
I watched a little more than that, but I'm not going to lie, I did not watch the full game.
I listened to the whole game, but when it came back to rewatching it, I got through, I almost finished the second quarter, but not quite.
Wow, impressive.
So,
okay.
About 15 to 20 minute time span after that first drive was just, I just had to watch it just to see if it was as bad
just
on TV.
To see the train wreck,
As it was listening to it. So,
yeah.
So that's why I did watch.
It was.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to preview the matchup with the Packers. We have an interview with a Packers fan, John Hagengruber. John and I actually attended the last game on it was Monday Night Football.
It was
Packers Seahawks.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about that, and then he knows the Packers inside and out. He's also University of Wisconsin grad, so huge Russell Wilson fan. He went to the same high school as Dave Craig, and actually got to meet Dave Craig and caught passes from him. So he does kind of have a Seahawks connection and a really good guy to talk to about Packers. So we'll have him on, and all the other stuff. We have cuts to talk about.
I was gonna say we got to talk about the cuts.
As much as there is to talk about. Cutting down from the 75 to 53 man roster, and right at the end, the Seahawks actually make a trade away. I believe it was a 6th round draft pick for a guy out of that played for the Colts, and a guy who could potentially be the backup nickel corner behind Jeremy Lane.
Burley. I just like his last name, Burley.
Marcus Burley.
He's very burly.
Yeah. So the nice thing that I like about that is that Colts fans were really upset.
Yeah.
So
no, that's always a good sign.
That's how you know it's a good sign that you got somebody decent.
Absolutely. So I guess we'll start out with the Raiders game.
Let's get into the Raiders game.
Okay. Really, all I wanted to talk about was Russell Wilson's first 3 pass attempts.
Well, why don't we listen in to Russell Wilson's first pass attempt of the game?
So just shy of the 20-yard line, Robert Turbin in a tailback. Wilson going deep on the first play, looking for Curse. Jermaine Curse, hand fighting, and makes the grab. Well, that's one way to start it. Yards on the opening play.
And a really good job in pass protection there as well. An excellent job of scanning across the formation. You see the good play action fake here, and Turbin comes all the way back. You see those eyes? That's a free runner coming at him, and Turbin does an excellent job taking care of his responsibility, and you just can't throw it any better than that.
So first play of the game, they come out and go deep to Jermaine Curse.
Yeah. Great play, great pass protection. That was awesome to see. And just like Brock described in the call there, made a nice adjustment by Robert Turbin coming over, picking up the guy coming off the right edge, give Russell all the time he needed to place a perfect ball. I mean, it couldn't have been any more perfect than that.
It was great. And there was a little bit of contact there between the...
They let him play,
which... I started kind of seeing that a little bit after the people started getting a little bit outraged over it.
Yeah, I think you saw it kind of tone down the flag thing week 3, and I think you really saw it in week 4. I don't think you're going to see a giant change in the regular season, just like we've always been saying. But, that first play, what a way to start out the game, to just come out first play, Russell Wilson, boom, call it good. And then what they have, one rushing attempt somewhere in there, and then Russell Wilson threw 2 more dimes, including the touchdown to Luke Wilson.
And here it is.
First down at the 25. Wilson over the middle. Luke Wilson makes the catch, and just like that, the Seahawks are on the board.
So that was it. 4 plays, 80 yards, and 6 points.
Took like a minute and change. Yeah. 3 for 3 for Russell, 77 yards and a touchdown. He couldn't have looked sharper. The offensive line looked, pretty well in that first drive when he had all the starters in, so that was nice to see.
I think the Raiders didn't quite, I don't think they had nearly, they may have had a few starters in on defense, but it actually was kind of the Raiders' second team there on defense. So really, you would kind of hope to expect that.
Yeah, they had a lot of their starters out there, though.
Yeah.
And they played a lot of their starters on offense throughout the first quarter and a half, almost 2 quarters. I mean,
guys who look like, and
the receiver Moore, he's their number one,
Edmarius,
I think.
Moore,
Yeah. And he was out there late in the game, catching touchdowns and that sort of thing. So,
and Derek Carr, their new starter.
Look, I like Derek Carr coming out of college, and I also secretly have rooted for him to make it just because of what happened to his brother. Jared and I call it David Carr disease. You can see it when a quarterback gets just dinged so many times to where you just can't hang in the pocket. You just can't keep your eyes downfield. You just can't do it. It gets in your head. So to see Derek Carr come in and play a good game, and then I saw today he's been named the starter as well for the Raiders. So that it was a nice, impressive performance by him. That first drive they scored on, he had the throw to, I think it was Moore. Adams was
on Richard Sherman.
Yeah, on Richard Sherman.
Mm-hmm. Right near the goal line.
And Sherman played great defense. That was just a ridiculous throw.
Ridiculous catch.
It was a ridiculous catch. Going back, it was behind him, so he's lunging back behind himself, one-handed, snags it in. Okay, you're going to make some of those. The previous, they had him in a third and long before that. Phillip Adams again was in coverage in the slot. He was beat by 5 or 6 steps. Phillip Adams also got beat on a touchdown.
He had a rough day. It was a rough day.
Well, he had a rough day, and he had a rougher day the next day because he was one of the cuts.
Right.
And you can see why. Guy, he just can't. If you can't play man-to-man any better than that, I mean, good Lord.
Well, and to me, it almost seemed like he was taking plays off. And if you're not going to play hard in the first quarter of a preseason game when you're kind of on the bubble of making the team anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. It's just not going to work out.
No, it's just not going to work out. So, and then from there, you just saw Derek Carr get a little hot. And again, we started rotating some of our twos in. They kept a lot of their ones in on offense, it felt like to me. Yeah, the defense didn't look great. Am I really concerned in a preseason game 4? You know, not at all.
Right.
Give me a break. There's really nothing going on in the 4th preseason game other than just seeing some random guys get some run and see what they can do. So, I don't know. I was frustrated, yes. I reserve hat throws for the regular season, though. I was close to throwing my hat during the first quarter because they come out and they just score that touchdown lickety-split, and you're like, oh, well, here we go.
Here we go. Yeah, this is going to be just like the last couple of games where we pile on early and
pile on late.
Right.
Just pile on.
The entire time.
But no, it's probably good that the team got a little bit of a spanking, you know, going into the first game of the year just to kind of give them a little wake-up call. Probably not the worst thing in the world.
No, I don't think it is. It is kind of that it's good to show the team if you don't play your best, how quickly you can let it get away from you because, boy, did
they. These are all professionals.
Yeah.
These are all professionals. These guys were all the best in their state at one point in their life at what they do. Even the 4th string guy.
Exactly.
So these are all quality athletes. The guy that... It's hard to take things away from a game 4 of the preseason, no doubt. But one guy that did underperform to me and was kind of alarming, and everybody will probably make fun of me, was John Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
He had a terrible game.
Well, the guy didn't
average 38 yards per punt. 38.
This is like the first time that he actually saw action in a game since
you do week one thing. Okay, two, you're the holder for the field goal team. You just kick the ball. That's what you do.
Yeah.
And he's been such a weapon. You've seen when we've bogged down on drives near midfield, instead of going for it on a 4th-and-3 or something like that, Pete Carroll always elects to punt because John Ryan always gets off a nice boomer, pins him down there, you rely on that defense, and you play ball that way. And that's Seahawk football.
Right.
Well, if John Ryan's not getting that done, and if he's going to become a shankopotamus for the whole season, that could be problematic.
That could be problematic, but that,
I think he'll get it together.
It's just one game.
It's just one game. I was just like,
but it
really?
Does give this you something to watch.
This is all you had to do all preseason was just sit on the bench and practice your punts during practice, and you come out and you lay those kind of eggs, but one right after another.
He held every field goal like a champ, though. You can't can't take that away from him.
Best holder in the league,
exactly.
great hands for the ginger, but. Yeah, so that was a little disappointing. I thought Brian Walters actually played a good game when it was all said and done.
He
had the one fumble. It was just one of those tough hits.
It was. Well, he was kind of running with the football out there, though, a little bit, and you never want to see that. But he did recover well from it.
Right, he did. He came back and played well for the rest of the game, so that was encouraging, especially since he ended up being cut but then being brought back.
That was really interesting to me. And
because when they said they cut him, I was like, oh, God, we are all in on Earl.
All in on Earl because there's nobody else.
In. And that's terrifying. I think that somebody had to have gotten into Carroll's ear and been like, okay, look, well, let's just bring Brian Walters back. We'll get rid of Phil Bates. Let's put Brian Walters out there when it's not a big deal. When it's like we've talked about, situational stuff.
You know, I will say though, Walters did impress me in just the way that he had one catch where he he took it and ran with a purpose.
Sure.
And right up the middle. And I feel like we haven't seen Earl a whole lot just in the preseason, and obviously they're seeing him in practice a whole lot more, so you don't really have a great idea of how he's looking in practice compared to in-game. So But I did feel, I felt that Brian Walters, he did a pretty good job. So I think we are going to see a little bit of both of those guys.
I would think so, just for all the reasons we've mentioned before. But the Hawks did name Earl the starting punt returner as well.
Yes,
so
they did.
Here we go, I guess. Look, you don't always agree with everything that your team does. You just don't. And I couldn't disagree more with this decision. I think it's a bad decision. I think this is something that's going to hurt us down the road in a way that's nearly catastrophic. And I just have to be on the record foremost and upfront and saying this is not a decision that I'm comfortable with. But we're going to do it. We're going to do it. So, yes, I will be cheering Earl on every time he's taking a punt back. But
you're also going to have that your dad hat on. And
oh, man. Oh, man. Just don't get hurt.
Just don't get hurt.
Just don't get hurt. So, yeah, it's kind of it. I think having Brian Walters come back on the roster is going to help with that. So
makes you feel a little bit more comfortable.
Way better.
That he's back there. And
yeah.
I would be okay if they decided that Earl wasn't the guy. I would be happy with Brian Walters back there based on what I've seen from him in the preseason. So
yeah.
I don't think they, like you said, you don't know just how much difference it's going to make or when a guy like Earl really is going to make the difference.
Right.
But I do think a guy like Brian Walters would do well in that spot. So
right.
Kind of stinks for Phil Bates because
he'd had a nice camp
and he was not named to the practice squad. That could change.
Right.
Because they did name their eight guys and then they brought in two more guys.
Because you can bring
today.
Up to 10 now. Yep.
It's up to 10. And Phil Bates is eligible now because I think he was one of those guys that under the old rules, he wouldn't have been eligible for practice squad
right.
this year. And but this year he is. So
yep.
He's
but
a guy.
We kept seven receivers too.
Which was a little bit surprising to me. Did that surprise you at all? The only four running backs and
really.
Seven wide receivers?
Not really. That's where I've always wanted them to go in the roster, to be honest. I always felt like we were getting rid of a receiver or two too many and keeping on another back or two. And you're like, we never see those guys.
Yeah.
We never see those guys. Only two backs are on the field at most at any given time. You can have up to four or five wide receivers on the field at any given time. Mm-hmm. So having seven receivers, yeah, that makes a lot more sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to see that. I think that also speaks to the growth of Russell Wilson and where they see the game going and that we're going to be a little more of an aerial team. And so to keep some more targets around for him, just in case one of those rookies doesn't come through, say a Paul Richardson doesn't play well throughout the season, say a Kevin Norwood doesn't play well. Now you've got some guys that have been around the block a little bit that you can trust to come in and fill the role. So yeah. I thought it was a good decision.
And one wide receiver that did get cut that they did bring back to the practice squad was Matthews, which he was the guy that he was a CFL player last year.
Big tall guy.
Big tall guy, and they brought him in, so he's going to be on the
practice
squad
in the preseason.
He really didn't.
Didn't do anything.
But they still like him, it seems like. So
they like those physical freaks.
Yeah.
You know,
one of those guys that maybe once he develops a little bit, gets a little more time in practice and at the NFL level, then maybe you'll see a guy like that develop into a better player here come.
Yeah.
And then Bronson, the running back from Eastern Washington, who you're a big fan of.
He waved.
But brought onto the practice squad.
Ugh.
So.
All right. Well, all right. You can stay on the practice squad.
He impressed a lot
of
people.
I'm sure he's a fine fellow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought he was okay. But yeah, that's fine. If you're gonna only keep four backs and you keep an extra back on the practice squad, that makes a lot of sense. He's probably not gonna get picked off by anybody else. You know,
no,
as
he
far
didn't.
As yeah. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I think that makes a lot of sense putting Bronson there. Do we want to talk about the other cuts and stuff then, since we're kind of here, I guess?
Well, before we go that way, and I guess this kind of works on both sides, but after the Seahawks got down, you know, what it was, 28-7, one thing that I was really looking for was, would a guy like Terrell Pryor be able to lead this team and mount a bit of a comeback? Because you know, that's kind of one of our knocks on Tavarius Jackson has always been whenever he's in the game, he's never been the guy that can lead you back from behind and tends to throw picks in the fourth quarter when you need to be coming back to win the game.
Right.
And could Terrell Pryor be that kind of guy who maybe could fill that role where Tavarius Jackson is deficient? So, but he does kind of bring him back a little bit.
11 for 17, had a touchdown, had a decent performance.
He did.
He was Terrell Pryor. Look, they decided to not keep three quarterbacks.
No.
They decided to go with more guys at receiver. So, look, that's fine. If you're going to cut one, or two, obviously, because they waived B.J. Daniels as
who
well.
Ended up back on the practice squad, so that was nice
which
to see.
Which is great to see. And by all accounts, it sounded like B.J. Daniels played fine. So that's good. But, yeah, I'm not surprised that Terrell Pryor is gone at this point just by the way you could kind of – you could just kind of hear the rumbling. You heard – his excuses after the game, not the Raider game, but the Charger game about he didn't ever expect to be in the game at that point.
Oh, really?
And so that's why he wasn't prepared, and that's why he threw that pick and blah, blah, blah. And at that point...
You don't
want
to say that.
that's not what you want to say to the reporter.
Right.
You know, interviewing at you at the locker. So that wasn't good. I think that was probably the nail in the coffin, would be my guess, because that's a mentality that you can't have as a backup quarterback. And I don't think he sees himself as a backup quarterback.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't.
But you still need to prepare as though you're going to be the starter.
Right.
And that should be your mentality as
a backup
quarterback.
So he'll probably be a San Francisco 49er before long.
And I thought about that a little bit because we did talk about how the situation down in San Francisco is not very good.
Nope.
But really, it's a backup quarterback. And... I guess if it came down to it, yes, I would rather, if something happened to Kaepernick, I'd rather them have Gabbert as their backup
rather than
a guy like Terrell Pryor. But at the same time, is it worth keeping a guy like that on your team just to keep him away from another team just in the case there's an injury?
Oh, no, as far as from the Seahawks perspective?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely not. No. You can't manage a roster in that way.
No.
So, yeah, if I'm the Niners, yeah, I'll waive Blaine Gabbert now and right. I grab him. I mean, what's there to even think about? It's not even close.
Well, I was curious to see if the Rams might pick him up, but they went with Case Keenum, who got cut by the Texans.
Really?
So
I think that's a good pickup for them. I actually kind of like Case Keenum's game a little bit.
I was a little bit surprised that he got cut from the Texans, to be honest.
I was too. So I guess we'll kind of see how that transpires when it's all said and done. But
they're going to go with Sean Hill, though, I think. I think they feel pretty good with him
We'll see a lot
being
of
the starter.
Hill.
But
who knows?
Obviously...
If he stinks it up, then you'll see Keenum. Or this is the problem when your starter goes down. I mean, this is how fragile the NFL is you're one injury away from being like, we're going with Sean Hill or Case Keenum or Tavares Jackson or B.J. Daniels.
Yeah.
That's the reality of the NFL. So... good luck with that, Denver Broncos, and your aging quarterback.
Yeah, with an unproven backup quarterback as well. So
right.
Yeah, let's get into these cuts just a little bit more.
I'm not going to read all these because there's a bunch.
There are a bunch.
I'm just going to read you the ones that did kind of stand out to me. Obviously, Phillip Adams.
He's gone.
See you later. Thank goodness. Eric Winston.
He was a little bit of a surprise.
Right.
Because you thought having that veteran presence there at right tackle would
great
be good.
Great just in case, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Guess not. Guess they're fine with Britt at this point with Bailey as the backup to that. So, yeah, a little worrying, but that's how this team rolls with offensive linemen. They stick with these young guys, and I guess that's where we're going.
My hope is just... the fact that we've never been able, just in the 2 years that Russell's been behind center, we've never had an offensive line group that's really stayed healthy together throughout the season.
Right.
And I think that is so important to have an offensive line group that can grow together and gel together. And as long as Britt, you know, he's going to have his rookie moments where he's going to go up against somebody who's, you know, really tough on the outside. And yeah, he might give up a couple sacks. He might give up quite a few pressures, but he'll be learning. And hopefully that experience, I mean, you saw it with J.R. Sweezy.
Sure.
He had never played the position before.
Right.
And, but thankfully, you know, Britt does have experience at that position. And I just think that it'll give him that much more of an opportunity to grow and learn just that much quicker.
I think that's a great take on it. And you have to have some faith, too. Sweezy's turned into a good guard.
Absolutely.
He's turned into a very good guard.
And people are pegging him as, you know, offensive lineman to watch for, if that's really a thing. But
hey, look, I don't mind watching the big boys. That's where it all is said and done. That's where the whole game is decided. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. Absolutely. Big guy to watch for. And I would love to see Sweezy just have a road grader year.
I'd love it.
That's the other thing. People talking about Marchand's decline. I really believe with Carpenter and Sweezy at our guard spots, we're going to have better blocking in the run game than we've had the last couple years. So even if Marchand declines a little tiny bit in physical attributes, there's just going to be more holes there for him to get through too. So I don't see the running game taking a big step back like a lot of people seem to think. And Marshawn's not even that old yet. What is he? He's 29? 28. 28. Okay.
Yeah, I think he'll be turning 29.
Yeah, like during the season, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the going back to the four running backs, one of the things that I kind of thought was having Percy Harvin. I mean, essentially, he is part of the run game.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're throwing bubble screens or whether or not you're... you know, going out to, you know, bringing him across and and handing off to him. So he is one of those guys that I see as a big part of the running game. And also somebody, you know, talking about guys that if they stay healthy, but one of those guys that can help open things up for Lynch as well.
Oh, without question. Speaking of the running back, Spencer Ware released.
Right.
Which a little surprising. I mean, only because it was drafted last year.
Right.
A lot of talk about how hard of a runner he is. I thought that he always looked fine, but he's very much just north-south. There's nothing else to him. He's just kind of a basher. So, okay.
Well, and they were kind of thinking of him being a potential fullback, you know, converting him kind of to fullback, and that ended up not happening. And so
Coleman's been great.
Derek Coleman's been great. Kiaro Small, he was one of those guys that...
Seventh round choice.
Yeah.
So, but one of this year's draft picks that was waived as well.
He ended up going to the Browns.
Oh, okay. Jimmy Staten, the defensive tackle that we drafted this year.
Mm-hmm. Practice squad. He landed on the practice squad.
Okay. One of the guys that really surprised me was Corey Toomer.
Corey Toomer, and then
they've invested a lot in this guy.
Benson Maoa too.
And Maoa, those were the other two that I wanted to mention because I mean everybody else is just, you know, they're filler guys. So I was really shocked about Corey Toomer. They have put a lot of time and effort into him, and he's when he's been healthy, he's really flashed. So they must have just given up on his health at that point.
I think part of it too is. Yeah, just how well, a guy like Mike Morgan played pretty well in this preseason. So
and you make room on the roster for a KPL.
Yeah.
So
and Brock Coyle had a great preseason.
Absolutely.
The guy you kind of don't know about, Bruce Irvin, you know, with his injury, how well he'll bounce back from injury there. So, you know, maybe that's one of those things, depending on how Bruce responds to the injury. Maybe they kind of keep Corey Toomer's number in hand just in case. But Toomer's just, he's had a hard time staying healthy too. And I, you know, how long do you wait for a guy after, what has it been, 3 years of being injured?
Yeah, exactly. And
not being able to play. So,
sure.
But super talented guy. You just, hasn't been able to make it on the field.
Can't put it together if your body doesn't cooperate.
Right.
What are you going to do? Health is one of the factors of talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the measurables. So, yeah, that's kind of it for the cuts for me getting down to the final roster. I feel great about the final roster, as good as we possibly could. I feel like management's done a great job. John Schneider's done a great job in making sure that we've addressed the holes where we can and putting on the finest team on the field that we can this year to try to repeat.
Absolutely. So, I guess the only other guys, other couple practice squad guys were DBs, and that was Terrence Parks and Stephen Terrell. So, and then the one guy that I kind of thought he was going to make the team after seeing how Phillip Adams did in that Raiders game, Akeem Augusti. I thought he would be kind of your backup nickel guy behind Lane, but of course they trade with the Colts, so that kind of Augusti did not make the team.
Did not make the team. No Augusti.
No.
Got cut in August.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's basically it with the fanfare that you could possibly have wrapping up a week 4 preseason game. Looking at the past now, the preseason is over.
The preseason is over. It's a quick turnaround.
Guess what we get to do now?
We have the Packers.
Let's talk about
on
games
Thursday
that matter.
Thursday night. These games matter.
I'm really excited about this.
I was on a, what was it? I think I was looking at a blog post or something, and somebody on the Packers was making an argument that these games don't matter, or this game doesn't really matter. And it's like, no, this game matters. I mean,
they all matter.
You might be preparing yourself for the fact that your team might lose, but it still matters.
It's not the end of the world if they
lose. No, it's not the end of the world if you lose week one, but it's still, makes a difference.
It does. It does make a difference.
So let's talk about the Packers.
Okay.
Seahawks versus Packers. And these are really two very different teams, I think, than the teams that we saw 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say, well, maybe not stylistically. I think they still have the same mindset and approach to a game. But as far as the roster, where you are at this point in time as a team, yes, they do feel like they're in very different places. Because 2 years ago, Russell Wilson was having his third start against the Green Bay Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers were a Super Bowl favorite.
Like right.
They were one of the teams that people were looking at. So, yeah, I think the expectations have switched mightily for these two teams, although I think that the Packers are probably the number two team in the NFC right now that I'm looking at going, yeah, maybe.
Well, especially with all the injuries on the 49ers defense, you can't...
And upcoming suspensions.
Holy smokes. So they're getting hit really hard. You know, Arizona Cardinals could really be one of the top teams in the West if you consider what's... But they've gotten hit on defense, too. So
losing Dockett's gigantic.
It is gigantic.
And they lost Darrell Washington in free agency. They were already light at linebacker, and then they lose a guy on the defensive line, one of your stalwarts.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. Like, that's tough to fill. Those are two huge slots.
Let all those other injuries happen at other teams on the NFC West.
But absolutely. You have to be, as a Hawks fan, you have to be pretty stoked that we've gotten to this point with nothing major.
Exactly.
And that's all you can ask for, going into a matchup against a very potent Packers team that comes in, obviously offensively, centered around the great Aaron Rodgers, probably the best quarterback in the game right now.
I would pick him if... If you put me on the spot, mm-hmm. I would pick him as the guy that I would take right now over anybody else.
Right now, for this season.
Right.
This season only, not thinking about anything else. Yeah, I'd take Aaron Rodgers. The mm-hmm. guy can do everything.
And then they have a guy, speaking of guys that weren't here 2 years ago, is mm-hmm. Eddie Lacy.
That was my next point. Absolutely.
And he's a real deal at running back, I think.
He's the closest thing I've seen to a Marshawn.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Guy runs ferociously, a big-time power back. And you saw us struggle a bit with power backs throughout the preseason, too, and all through the season last year.
Look at last year. I mean, a guy like Zach Stacy with the Rams, you know.
Good Lord, yeah.
He had a huge day against the Seahawks.
I'm a little worried about Eddie Lacy. Now, we do have Kevin Williams up front. He's a big body dude. He's known for being a good run stuffer.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, between him and me being up front, we should be okay right up the gut, but... Yeah, that Packers run game is a little bit scary with Eddie Lacy back there. Yeah. The guy's a legit back. Now, at the receiver position, and you start thinking about that matchup, Green Bay's offense against our defense, because that's the matchup, right?
Well, it's kind of where, you know, when we played the Broncos in the Super Bowl, that's where everybody looked, because you have a really top-tier offense against a top-tier defense.
Right, so your two top receivers are Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb.
And Jordy Nelson, I would probably say, is their number one.
He better be. Jordy Nelson's really good.
Yeah, he is. No, both of those guys are really good.
Randall Cobb's okay. I like him. He's still kind of... I like him fine. I think he's a good two. He's an okay two. I'd say he would be an awesome three. He's kind of in between that for me, especially with consistency and especially with injury issues and things like that. But he's going to play. So, I mean,
Absolutely.
It's not like he's injured.
No.
So he's coming in to do it. You've got another couple of wide receivers, Boykin, that mm-hmm. they've had for, I think they've had him for a couple seasons. And a new kid, Adams, is that...
The guy they picked up either early in the draft.
Right.
Yeah.
So... Because
they got Clinton Dix in the first round, right?
Yeah, ha-ha. So, but you look at that wide receiving core of that vaunted Packers offense, and it's not what it used to be. It's not Greg Jennings anymore with Jordy Nelson and James Jones. It's not that same receiving crew. I don't think that they have the firepower that way, especially with tight end. They're away from Jermichael Finley, obviously,
right. And
now they're going to be using God's gifts. So, and if everybody does quarrels, they're I guess starting tight end now. He's got God's gifts tattooed down the backs of his arms.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's all.
I'm really not up on my player tattoos.
No, that's just the one that's like stood out. Like we all joke about it. So, yeah, God's gifts. So Quarles, but he's not Jermichael Finley.
No, they're not really strong at tight end. That would definitely be one of the weaknesses.
So you take a step back in the passing game, you move a step forward in the running game, you're probably a net about the same effectiveness if you're a Packers offense.
Well, and that's one thing that's pretty nice on the defensive side is that where they don't have that strength at tight end, you see Cam Chancellor now being able to maybe focus more on the run game and against Eddie Lacy.
Sure.
So that's kind of nice that they don't have a really potent tight end, because that's really where Cam Chancellor's been really effective.
Yeah, he can still patrol the middle. Put a licking on anybody that decides to come across there. So yeah, that'll be fine. I like our matchup of either Maxwell or Sherman on Nelson at any point. Randall Cobb is a quick guy. I don't think that he's the type of guy that a Maxwell would struggle with. I really don't. So I feel fine there. I don't know who we're gonna have play the nickel slot.
I think it'll be Lane.
Is it Lane? Okay, because I know he had hurt his groin, so I didn't know if he was. If he was fine. I heard it in the Chargers game.
I think that's why they sat him out of the Raiders game, and they said that he'd be good to go for week one after sitting out that one game.
So that's fine there. So as far as that defense-offensive matchup, plus you throw in the fact that they're playing in the clink, and it just is so much harder for an offense and allows the pass rush to get off, I think that this is decidedly an advantage for us on defense. Now, it's tough to say that when it's Aaron Rodgers, right? Because Aaron Rodgers could just get hot, and it could just be one of those days, and you could be having a hard time. But last time they played here with that pass rush, we got after Aaron Rodgers, what was it, like 8 sacks in the first half or something like that?
And they were beat up, if I remember right, on the offensive line.
Slightly.
And, but yeah, we just got after Aaron Rodgers in that first half.
Right.
And, you know, and that's one of the things. They do have a backup playing center. You know, their guy who was projected to be the starting center going into week one got injured and is out for at least 8 weeks, I think it is.
Yep.
And so they are going to have a backup. So it's his first game at center.
The center is the quarterback of the offensive line. He's the guy that he's reading the front in front of him and making the line calls along with the quarterback. I mean, maybe Aaron Rodgers makes all the line calls at this point in his career.
Yeah, they do have some good veteran leaders on the line too. So that might be something that where they help out a rookie in that type of situation. But I don't know if it's going to be as big of a deal as some people are making it out to be. Yes, he might have a couple plays where, you know, he's going to be going up against guys like Brandon Mebane, who, but he's a big guy too. So I really don't know him well enough to know if he can stand up to that type of pressure that a guy like Mebane will put on you up the middle. But
well, I'm looking at the starting offensive line. You got Bakhtiari, their left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then they've got Josh Sitton at left guard. Then I think Lindsley must be the rookie guy that's starting at center.
Mm-hmm.
Or is he the one that got injured? I don't know.
That's right. He's the, he's the backup.
Yeah. Okay. And then they've got...
because J.C. Treader was the center.
Lang at right guard and Bulaga at right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Bulaga has been up and down his whole career. That's the most notable name on there. When I look at that, to me, I
feel like Sitton's a pretty
Sitton's
good
quality.
Bet. Yeah,
Sitton's quality, you know, but he's also the guard too. He's not taking your best pass rushers. I think Cliff Avril could have a field day with these guys.
That's
him
what
and
you hope
Schofield.
For. Yeah,
if Schofield can do anything like he's done in the preseason to this point, I like the odds of our pass rush against this Green Bay Packer offense coming in. As long as we can't stop the run, that's going to be the number one thing. We got to be able to stop the run. If we get them on schedule in the run and get Aaron Rodgers in that offense into a rhythm, it could be a really long day.
Yeah, well, and you know, I go back and I compare this team now to 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, we didn't have Cliff Avril and we didn't have Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk about guys that are
different
quality pass rushers.
Yeah.
Those are going to, they're going to be guys that are going to be in there a lot this game.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's one of those things where I look at it and I go, I still think that's advantage us, especially at home. So I guess we'll see how that kind of plays out. So that kind of leaves the other side of the ball, our offense against their defense. To me, this is the interesting matchup, because the offense has looked so good.
Right.
So good throughout...
Well, 11 of 13, I believe, the starters on offense. They've scored on 11 of 13 drives throughout the preseason.
Yeah.
And 9 of those 13 have been touchdown scoring drives.
In very few penalties. So if you can keep us ahead of schedule, plus with Percy Harvin, you know, that's something to me that's amazing. Now, my stupid dealie here will not pull up the Packers defensive depth chart, so we're just going to have to kind of wing it here. Their big addition over the season was Julius Peppers.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys. He played in a 4-3 his whole career.
With the Bears, right?
Yeah, and the Panthers as well.
Oh, right.
And now he's with the Packers, and they run that 3-4, mm-hmm. So how is he going to play? Are they going to have him standing up a lot? Are they going to have his hand in the dirt? That seems really weird to me that you would try to bring in a guy in free agency of that caliber and then try to even maybe even make him move positions a little bit. And I don't know that the Packers even know what they were doing at this point or that anybody's even really said anything.
Yeah, well, and one of the things in our interview with John coming up is he'll kind of talk a little bit about that, and because they haven't really shown anybody in the preseason what they intend to do defensively.
Sure.
With Peppers and Clay Matthews both in there at the same time. So that's going to be one of those things to watch in this game. But honestly, I see some Packers fans talking about how they're not worried about Percy Harvin because Shields, you know, he covered Harvin all the time and really shut down Harvin when he was with the Vikings. So
years ago?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Years ago. Shields is not the same player that...
No, and neither is Harvin. But I think Harvin's improved.
That's what I'm saying. I think, if anything, Harvin's even more dangerous now with the ball in his hands. I don't even know who they have at DBs for the Packers this year. It can't be anybody all that great.
No, I know they're talking about playing Clinton Dix at...
rookie.
Yeah, at safety.
Yep.
I'm not real up on their secondary either, but I do know that... I think it was the guy on the other side. I think they're pretty happy with the corners that they have. I don't know whether... Really, it's going to come down to how well they can rush Russell Wilson, and if he'll have time to get the ball out to guys like Harvin and Baldwin and
that's a little scary.
And Curse.
That's a little scary when you start talking about Clay Matthews.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. When he comes out and his hair's on fire, yeah, he's a heck of a ball player.
He wasn't really that much of a factor, though, the last time these two teams played, but now they have Peppers, and so there's another guy to be accountable for, you have a right tackle. They're probably going to be trying to pick on Justin Britt and just to see.
You know. I mean, if you're a defensive coordinator, right, and you're looking at that team, the Seahawks' starting offensive line, who appears to be the weak link right out of the gate, or at least the guy that you don't know about?
Mm-hmm.
It's Britt.
Exactly.
So, of course, they're going to come after him. So, there's for the Seahawks to have Marshawn on that side of Russell Wilson, on the right side of Russell Wilson, there to pick up on any blitzes and things like that that come from that side of the field. This is also you're going to see.
Well, and Zach Miller, too, having the tight end in there. He's, he really helped out. He's helped out a lot with blocking. And so, we may not see him going down the center of the field too much.
No, and that's something we do a ton of, is leave Zach Miller in to block, just like you said. So, yeah, you're probably not going to see a ton of that sort of thing. Now, as far as this is a great matchup as far as for Russell Wilson as well, because if they're bringing different guys and they're bringing a bunch of blitzes and things of that nature, you're really going to see if that third-year leap has begun, because that's where the game changes. It's mentally. It's before the line of scrimmage, and it's where you really have down every single play, every single coverage that's coming at you, and you've seen it enough times where you can recognize it no matter what they're doing to disguise it, for the most part. I mean, they'll still get you now and then. So if they're going to start bringing guys to maybe pick on a Brit or something like that, watch Russell just abuse them all day long right there. He'll just throw right into the blitz all day long.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a neat test for the offense in that way. I finally figured out the corners here, by the way, in case anybody was wondering. Tremont Williams on the left side and Sam Shields on the right.
Okay.
So
I think Williams is pretty good, though.
Tremont Williams is decent, yeah. Yeah, he's a decent level starting corner. He's not a guy that I look at and be like, shut down.
No.
But, yeah, so that's not a big deal there. They're strong safety, Morgan Burnett, and looks like free safety would be Micah Hyde. So that... I don't know. I think if we're going to be able to do some damage, I think this should be a defense that we are able to get off on the run game, and we should be able to throw the ball. We should have a pretty productive performance against these Packers. They were 24th in the league in points allowed last year.
And they were last in terms of scoring defense, too. So
I think that was... Oh, really? Because I think that was scoring defense is what I was...
No.
Or maybe that was total yards.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so I went back, and because one of the things that I wanted to look at was... I've always thought that the Packers' defense was not really that good. And,
no.
When I did go back and look at how they performed on the road.
Sure.
Here's a breakdown of what they did on the road last year.
Okay.
Gave up 34 points to San Francisco in a loss, 34 points to Cincinnati in a loss. Then their best game of the season on the road, they only gave up 17 points to Baltimore.
Okay.
Gave up 31 points to Minnesota, but they did win that game. 27 points to the Giants last year, and the Giants were not that good last year. They lost that game. Gave up 40 points to the Lions, 36 points to Dallas. They won that game. And then they gave up 28 points to Chicago in a game that they won. So they went 4-4 on the road last year, but they gave up an average of 31 points on the road.
That's unbelievable.
Which is, but it speaks to how well, you know, a guy like Aaron Rodgers is once they get down. But they did only have Rodgers at I think what was it, 8 games or because what did they go?
Maybe
6
it was
and
10 or something.
I think
like that.
Yeah. Because they
before he went down with the broken collarbone last year.
They only won 2 games without Rodgers.
Right.
So,
but they also didn't have Matt Flynn that whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you look at that matchup, I feel like that favors us. I really do, against that defense. And just like you were saying with those abysmal road numbers, but let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and be like, okay, you added Julius Peppers. That should make you better.
That should.
Does that take you from averaging 30 points down to 15 points?
No.
On the road?
It's
no, I don't think
difference.
It does. I think it maybe shaves a touchdown off that, and you're giving up 28 points maybe a game, or, you know, 26 points.
So if they give up 26, 28 points,
that's a win.
The Seahawks have not given up more than 24 points at home in the last 2 years.
Right. That's a win for us.
Yeah.
If we score more than 24,
or 24 or more,
right?
It should be a win.
That should be a win.
And what we've seen out of this offense, if they continue to have that kind of efficiency that they've had, I mean, 11 to 13 in the preseason. Granted, it's preseason, but you know, those are really efficient, productive offensive numbers.
And it was also efficient throughout third down conversions. I think I heard today that last year we were somewhere around 35 or 38%, somewhere like that, on third down conversions last year. That is not good enough. That is not good enough. You need to be up in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge area that this team can grow. And third down is the money down. You keep it going. You keep that drive going. You have more scoring opportunities. Instead of punting, maybe you're getting a field goal. Like, it makes a big difference when it's all said and done.
Well, and that's why I really look at this defensive line of the Packers, and they're really not very experienced. They've lost B.J. Raji.
Right. Can't believe I mentioned that.
And so that's why I think they're going to have a hard time containing the run. Like John will mention in the interview, their middle linebackers really aren't that great against the run.
No.
So taking all those things into account, and the fact that we tend to run a first and second down,
right,
that's going to leave us with a lot of those short third down opportunities, which Russell, give him the entire playbook on third down.
Put it in his hands.
You've got great
odds.
Very good odds.
You've got great odds at that point. The guy's going to figure out and diagnose exactly what needs to happen to get that, pick up that third down.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if those folks that are looking to this game with the offensive performance in mind in the preseason, and they're thinking, we're going to throw the ball out, Russell's going to be on fire, blah, blah, blah. Probably not. I would look for us to run the heck out of the ball during this game, unless we end up getting down and going from there. You maybe have some fluky turnovers penalties or whatever. But
I think time of possession is going to be really important in this game, because
keep it out of Aaron's.
And I think the Packers are probably going to try and do the same thing. They're going to want to try and have their offense on the field as much as they can, running the ball with Eddie Lacy, and seeing how well they can do with that.
Absolutely. Keep their defense fresh by keeping them off the field, which would be huge, because they don't have a lot of depth. So, no. Yeah, they have a few frontline starters that are good. But then what do you got after that?
Mm-hmm.
And if your defense is getting tired by the end of the game because Marshawn's just been pounding on you, yeah, that's the formula, right? That's how Marshawn beats up on most teams.
Right.
It's just
Fourth quarter comes around,
he's busting a 19-yarder off of two guys, and he's scoring a touchdown, stumbling it. So, yeah, I like our odds on this. Now, the one thing that makes me wonder a little bit, let's all think back to the Denver game, right? Remember how fired up Denver was for that game because it was this, got to avenge this and this, that, the other thing. And this is just preseason, right?
Right.
The Packer organization and the Packer fans have an animosity about the Golden Tate catch that is truly, it's unbelievable. Like, I've never seen a fan base whine so much. I mean, this is even more than us over the Super Bowl calls.
Yeah.
Seriously, over something that, look, it didn't even affect... It didn't even affect the overall.
Both teams made the playoffs.
And they went right where they would have gone if that game had gone the other direction.
Yeah.
So what's the big difference there? I think that Aaron Rodgers took it really personal that game, actually. He was really angry about it. This could be one of those games where you've got enough guys on that team from 2 years ago that they just want to come out and they're a little extra motivated. So I think we're going to need to guard against that. Now, I think what helps is that we're at home. It's the NFL opener. We're going to be unveiling the championship banner, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
You hope that maybe that extra juice also kind of helps level out what the Packers might bring in a redemption game.
I think the Packers are going to be fired up. I'm interested to see if Packer fan shows up just as strongly as they did 2 years ago, because Packers, they travel well.
They do.
And and they have fans all over the place, and they like to go.
And rightfully so. I actually like the organization, the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
I actually do.
Fans are really fired up, though. They have high expectations for this Packers team, and I think they should.
They have
a really good team this
year. They have the second best shot to get to the Super Bowl in the NFC, if you ask me.
This could be NFC Championship game preview.
Yeah.
If you want to think of it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely it could. So, opening night, Thursday night, I'm really stoked about that. I can't wait. It's going to be a really fun matchup. So, buckle up, people. Get ready. Because the season has started. And don't freak out if we lose.
I think I saw Packers fans get even more fired up after what happened in the game against the Raiders with the Seahawks, because that was kind of our one common opponent in the preseason,
right.
And the Packers, they did pretty well against the Raiders. Obviously, they were going up against Matt Schaub, though, who is now on the bench.
Right.
And we are going up against Derek Carr, who looks so much better.
Look, a fourth preseason game, as we said going into it.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing you can take from that. There's nothing you can take from that. Like Russell going 3-for-3 and having a drive on the first drive and scoring a touchdown. Even that, you're like, well, that was nice, but it's a fourth preseason game.
See, one thing that I looked at, looking at the Packers and who they played in the preseason, was I don't think they had a guy that they haven't played against a quarterback they're going to be prepared for quite like Russell Wilson. Listen to these first and second teamers of who they went up against in the preseason.
Okay.
Jake Locker and Charlie Whitehurst.
Oh boy.
Titans. Then
I actually like Locker, for the record.
Yeah. I do, but
I think
he's
gonna have a good year.
Okay, but he's not one of those.
No, he's not one of the guys. He's not one of the guys.
Quarterbacks. So Sam Bradford and Sean Hill.
Okay.
Matt Schaub, Matt McGloin. And then Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray with the...
Wow.
I almost even challenge you to guess what team that is.
The Chiefs.
Okay.
Because I like Chase Daniels. I think he can play.
Yeah.
I think he can play, but he'd probably never get a chance.
No.
Sitting behind Breeze for a few years did him just right. I think he's a good guy. But yeah, so exactly. What do you take away from that as far as their preparation for quarterbacks? And you've seen him struggle with the running quarterbacks. I mean, I didn't really want to go into that storyline.
Oh,
because,
well,
man,
yeah, Kaepernick has torn them up.
Right.
But almost every time that they've played him. But no, that's not Wilson's game either. But he can take it there if he needs to.
Oh, he can. He can. So I feel pretty comfortable about this game, actually. The more that I think about it, going into the podcast, I was like, gosh, this is a tough matchup. You got the Packers first week. I mean, come on. Like, the schedule's going to be brutal. And then as I started thinking about it, I was like, this should be a win.
It should be.
It should be a win. But yeah.
Things can happen.
Things can happen. Exactly.
And they do have three really tough teams right out of the gate.
They do.
Packers, and then going down to San Diego, who was a playoff team last year, and then obviously Denver, who is a Super Bowl team. And that's, you know, you mentioned the fact that Denver in the preseason, they were really ready to play the Seahawks and
yeah,
really, you know, looking at the game and put a lot into it, even though it was a preseason game. Well, now we're into the preseason and everybody's going to be giving your best. And like you said, 2 years ago, there's some guys on that team that really aren't that happy about what happened.
So I guess we'll see. But kickoff night, it's here, folks. Thursday.
It is.
Make sure you put on the right gear. I'll be wearing the appropriate attire.
Put your gear on, you know, in plenty of time beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Make
so
sure you
in.
Have your lucky socks.
It soaks into the NFL ether.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
you got to be ready. You
yes.
can't. Don't be one of those people that waits until after something bad happens in the fourth quarter or first quarter.
Right.
And then you get your gear on. No.
Exactly.
Prepare ahead of time. You got, you know, it's a late kickoff. You got all day. Do
yep.
it right.
Yep. Cool.
And we'll be ready.
Well, should we speak to John next?
I think we should.
Okay.
Let's hear what he has to say about the Packers coming up next. Welcome back, 12s, to the Seahawkers podcast. Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert here with you. Today on the line, we have John Hagengruber. He's a longtime Packers fan and graduate of the University of Wisconsin, so he's actually a big fan of Russell Wilson. And John and I actually attended the now infamous Fail Mary game in Seattle just 2 years ago. So
can't call it that. Stop it with that.
We can get into that, but okay. That's what other people call it.
Okay.
So anyway, I thought he would be the perfect one to come on and talk about the Packers going into game one. How's it going, John?
Hey, Brandon. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to try and channel some inner cheesehead for you tonight.
Outstanding. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice.
So channeling your inner cheesehead, how do the Packers look coming into the out of the preseason and into game one?
Well, you know, on the offense side, they didn't play Eddie Lacy too much, aside from some opening series. But he's averaging almost 6 yards per carry. It looks pretty good. Aaron looks just like Aaron. Aaron's going to be coming in blazing guns. The new center that they've had to go with, Treader, was looking pretty good right up until his injury, and now they've got to rely on a rookie. And probably the loudest stadium in the NFL. And what I would say is probably the rowdiest 12th man working against him. That's going to be a key to the game. The rest of the offensive line really falls into the probably good to even elite category. You've got Bakhtiari and Blaga on tackle. Both of those folks are Bakhtiari's second year, but he had a fantastic rookie season. Balaga's been around. He's back from an injury. And then you've got TJ Lang and Josh Sitton, who maybe is one of the best guards in the NFL. The wide receivers are fairly good. We've got at the top end, we've got Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, who are, you know, they're Pro Bowl type wide receivers. The new factors this year is going to be Jarrett Boykin and Davante Adams. And Davante Adams is a second round pick. They're pretty excited about him. He's dropped a few balls, but he's got some really good, very precise route running. He's been compared to Randall Cobb in a lot of ways. Tight end is going to be an area that they're generally deficient at right now. You've got a guy that they drafted this year, third-round pick from Cal, Richard Rodgers, who has been showing some pretty good flashes, but I suspect they're going to go with Corliss, who is a reliable target. But he's never going to be somebody that's going to be seen outrunning Richard Sherman in the backfield. So tight end is not going to be very exciting cadre to watch. And obviously they're playing against some pretty intense D. So it'll be a fun game to watch on that side. On the defensive side, you know, the addition of Julius Peppers is going to be really worth watching. Which Julius is going to show up? I anticipate the good Julius. I hope the good Julius shows up. But he's 34. He's not quite AARP eligible, but he's getting up there. He was really brought on to be the bookend of Clay Matthews and improve the ability to specifically to pressure and contain the Russell Wilsons and the Colin Kaepernicks of the NFL. So we'll see if that can happen this week. And he's shown some flash on Pepper's side, but then he's also had some plays where he's kind of stood back. Linebackers on the other side, Clay Matthews, he's back after a 7-game hand injury. That's going to be pretty interesting to see. Is he shaking the dust off? Is his thumb okay? On defense, the other big question is the Packers' inside linebackers. You know, they're going to be up against a real beast in Marshawn Lynch. And A.J. Hawk is there. He's solid. He's not fast. He's not flashy. He's not really athletic, but he's smart and solid. The Pack did not choose to draft an inside linebacker high in the draft, and that's after getting burned by some really good wide receiver, I'm sorry, some really good running backs throughout the season. Brad Jones is going to be the other one in there. He's largely okay, but he'll never be mentioned in the same breath as somebody like a Hardy Nickerson. Clinton Dix, you know, I was delighted when they got him in the first round. He actually fell that far. He's been solid, but obviously he's still learning the game in the NFL. He probably brings the best football instincts for the Packers safety since we lost Nick Collins to a neck injury, but they're going to need him and Morgan Burnett to really step it up with Marshawn there and Russell.
So going back to the offensive side of the ball, John, you mentioned the injury to center J.C. Treader, and you did talk about a little bit about Corey Linsley, rookie starting, and kind of that tough environment that he'll be playing in. How concerned are Packers fans over that, or is he going to be doing pretty well kind of having those veterans on either side of him at guard?
You know, having been in that stadium and heard the noise and how intense the fans are there, they have to be concerned. I'm concerned for sure. And Linsley is he's a beast. They picked him up in the, I believe, fourth or fifth round. And he may not be an elite athlete. He's strong as a bull. I think he may have drafted in terms of the at the combine, he may have been one of the top five in terms of bench presses, in terms of reps. It was off the chart there, but he's a rookie. He's coming into the most hostile environment in the NFL, and that's going to be a challenge. And, you know, that's key to Aaron Rodgers. They're probably going to be emphasizing more of the no huddle going in, but we'll see. That's something that I'm sure fans will be watching.
I've been hearing a lot about that Packers no huddle, and particularly how impressive they were against the Rams in the preseason. Are they doing anything differently than previous years, or is it getting a lot of hype because of the fact that it was up against the Rams and they're known to kind of have a pretty strong front seven?
You know, they had some good times against the Rams, but then they also, a former first-round pick, Derek Sherrod, who's going to be the backup, which concerns me. If any of the starting offensive line goes down, Sherrod had a horrible game against the Rams. You know, I really need to look beyond the no huddle. I've heard some raves about it as well. I think Charles Woodson was quoted. It's former Packer, obviously coming away when they played against the Pack and over in Oakland as to how impressed he was. But it's you really need to consider that the Pack finally has an option to help keep defenses off Aaron Rodgers with Lacy. And to me, that's way, way, way more important than their no huddle. Yeah, I've heard that they want to run, I think it's like 75 or 80 plays a game, which is a heck of a lot. During the game against the Raiders, they got off more than almost 40 plays before Rodgers even left the first half. So that's probably the kind of reviews that may be bouncing around out there about the Packers no huddle. It's just going to be... Can Eddie Lacy free up some of the D and take him off Aaron Rodgers? Because if Aaron Rodgers is laying down every other play, we're not going to see that many plays to begin with. So,
well, speaking of Eddie Lacy, there's one difference, a big difference, I think, in he obviously wasn't with the Packers when these two teams played 2 years ago. Obviously he's a big change. In what other ways has this team changed since these two teams went up against each other 2 years ago?
You know, I'll put it most of that on Eddie Lacy. He's given Aaron Rodgers the running back that he never had. In the entire time Aaron's played, he's never really had a franchise, you know, blue chipper type running back that's of this kind of quality. So that's the key. Whether or not Julius Peppers factors into the equation, that'll be interesting. But I think, you know, maybe I'll step out on a limb here and say maybe if the Pack had Eddie Lacy last game, it may not have come down to that whether or not it was a good referee call or not. But we'll see. That's where I fall back on. I think it's really Eddie Lacy. And there's some things that worry me. We don't have Greg Jennings anymore. Greg, he was fantastic in terms of his routes and keeping the secondary occupied and freeing up the Jordy Nelsons and the Randall Cobbs of the world. But it's really going to come down to Eddie Lacy. And the other issue is, can our new tight ends, we don't have JerMichael Finley anymore, can our new tight ends keep the defense off Aaron Rodgers? They're not fantastic blockers. So I think that's something that Seahawks fans are going to be watching for, especially.
So the Packers' defense has always been a bit of a concern for the team. I went back and looked last year. They gave up an average of nearly 31 points on the road last season. Is with some of the changes they've made on defense and maybe also being a little bit healthier, because I know injuries have been a concern in past years, are they going to be able to improve on that number?
I hope so. You know, listening to Coach McCarthy, he says that this defense this year is more like their 2009 and 2010 defenses, which, you know, that's how they won the Super Bowl. We'll see. Ted Thompson has done something that he's hardly ever done before. He's actually stepped out and actually brought in quality free agent in Julius Peppers. And the last time he's done that, I think it's probably Charles Woodson was the last time it's been done. And that's looking back a few years. If Clay Matthews is healthy and if Mike Neal, who has been a real beast on the defensive line, if he steps up, that's going to be key. One name to watch, his name is Jerone Elliott, and he's an undrafted free agent, kind of a neat story. He had 5 sacks in the preseason, the most of any player in the NFL. So that's a neat story. Whether or not he plays too much against the Seahawks will remain to be seen. Brad Jones is going to be a weakness inside linebacker, I think. And drafting HaHa Clinton Dix, you know, that's improved the secondary. Probably in terms of potential secondary, he may be the best one we've had since Nick Collins, just watching him. So I think they will improve. Question is, can they bring that improvement into a really, truly hostile environment like if there is in the Seattle stadium?
One thing I kind of had a question about, too, obviously the injury to B.J. Raji is a bit of a hit to the defensive line. You have a couple young guys on the defensive line, and then you have a vet that you brought in from Minnesota. How has that defensive line looked to you?
I'd probably give it a B- on the scale now that we've lost B.J. Raji. He was a bull. He was in there, and he played just about every play. And he brought a lot of strength. He didn't bring a ton of speed, but he was a two-gapper. He tied up, you know, he always tied up 2 offensive linemen. And that was a big key, that reason that Clay Matthews actually was there was some additional pressure somewhere else on the line besides him. Losing B.J. Raji is a huge hit. And I think that's going to haunt the Packers. He's on injured reserve. He's out the rest of the year. They're trying out a number of different folks, but... You know, Mike Neal is going to be an important part of this up front. You know, I think there's going to have to be some folks that are going to step up. But whether or not that happens the first game, I don't know. We'll see. It may take some time for this new D-line to gel.
Just about wrapping up here, but knowing that you are a University of Wisconsin guy, and I do remember when you tweeted me right after that, right after the Seahawks drafted Russell Wilson, you were expecting him to do great things, but did you expect him to really be in this position he's in just after 2 years?
You know, that does surprise me. When I watched Russell every weekend, we got the Big Ten channel specifically watched the Badgers that year, and it was delightful to watch him and to watch a quarterback. The Badgers have always been a very running back dominant game. That's been their strength, and all of a sudden they had this new quarterback who had brought a real dynamic aspect to the team. I thought Russell would be a very good quarterback at some point. I didn't think that he would be winning a Super Bowl as quickly as he did. So I love to look back and at that tweet and say, wow, you know, I actually maybe had an idea of something that might happen at some point, but whether he'd win a Super Bowl in 2 years or a year or two, there's no way. I thought maybe in a couple, 3 years, he'd be taken to the playoffs. But he's amazed me at what he's done.
And obviously I mentioned Golden Tate's touchdown catch 2 years ago. It was kind of interesting because at the time, I think neither of us, we really, you know, being at the game, you didn't have the vantage point that people did on TV. So, has your point of view changed on that? Because I know when it happened, it was kind of, you know, shrugged it off a little bit and obviously, chalking up the troubles on offense to the 8 sacks in the first half. But, now that you've had some time and obviously it's been covered to death over the last 2 years, has it changed your mind at all?
No, it's still a heartbreaker, Brandon. But if I'll look for a silver lining inside of that very dark cloud of cheese, you know, it got us our officials back for the rest of the season. But no, it's still a heartbreaker. And, you know, if the team's really playing well, it doesn't need to come down to the very last play in a backup ref. So that's where I look back at the pack and I think about some things that they could have done differently and it never would have got to that point. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if Eddie Lacy can help factor into that equation. you know, I'll have my fingers crossed, but I've also been on that stadium. I've been on that field with you and it is a deafening crowd and it does things to quarterbacks and centers that I don't think you see much anywhere else in the NFL to that degree.
Before we started the call, you mentioned how we really haven't seen much of how the Packers defense is going to use both Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers at the same time. Do you have any idea or what's going on with the defensive scheme there? Let us in on that before you go.
You know, what I think is going to be, this is my read on what I'm hearing, is that they're going to do as much as they can from the outside with Clay and Julius to spell this group of relatively inexperienced defensive linemen with the exception of Mike Neal. But then again, it sounds like Don Capers has been, he has kept the lid on this new approach, what they're going to be doing. They, you know, you hear the pack, they're raving about how they think it'll factor in this season. But I don't know, the sky's the limit, I hope, from that standpoint. But most other folks' guesses on that is as good as mine because they're keeping those practices closed when they're actually using that lineup. So very little is known about it. And the folks, the journalists that may have seen it, aren't talking. So it's been interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, something to watch for going into Thursday.
I think it's going to be the best game of the season in terms of NFL games this year. So it should be a really fun watch.
You are listening to the Seahawkers podcast, the official podcast of the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. Adam, did you know we are the number one rated team-based podcast on iTunes now?
You confirm that over all the other ones?
Well, at least the ones that I've looked at in the past, because I went and looked at the Patriots, I went and looked at the Browns, I went and looked at the Eagles, and you know, all of the official team-based ones now
that we've been able to see. Yeah.
All
I know is
that we're the Cowboys.
Yeah, we topped the Cowboys. And I say that with you guys, the listeners, like we did that. So well done, people. Now we're only one up. So, you know, little pressure there. You know, all it takes is one person to review them and bam, we're right back
well,
to
see,
tie.
I have my sights now on I think it's the Around the NFL podcast.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think it's at 171. So,
oh, no problem.
You know, we got 100 to go, but you got to set goals. And then, you know, that puts guys like Rich Eisen and Dave Dameshek on notice too, because they're got to come after them next.
Yeah, absolutely. So the review that put us over the top, what do we have?
All right, here it is. Just looking for a catchy tune is the username.
Nice.
Best Seahawks podcast by far, in caps.
Heck yeah.
So found this pod about the same time we began our glorious and ultimately victorious run through the postseason last year. And it has quickly become one of my undisputed favorites. Keep up the good work, fellas. Can't wait to follow you through the new season.
Nice. Thank you very much. Looking for a catchy tune.
Yep. And we got some Stitcher reviews.
Oh, cool.
So two new Stitcher reviews. I think we're up to four total.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So you guys on Stitcher, you guys are really starting to come.
They're bringing it.
All right.
And
come correct.
And so this is Jonatron 5000.
Yes.
I feel like I should read this in a robot voice. I am a new listener to the podcast.
You know Jonatron's out that way.
Yeah. So he says, I'm a new listener to the podcast, but longtime Seahawks fan from Portland, Oregon. Yes, we do exist. He puts in parentheses. Since I listened on Stitcher, I felt it was my duty to write a review.
It was, and thank you.
Yeah, and good on you for using the word duty.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of that
word. Oh, yeah, you're a military guy.
Duty.
Yeah. And I'm a dirty joke guy, so yeah.
I feel national media does not cover the Seahawks enough. No, they don't. And when it is, typically just a quick soundbite about how tough the LOB is, tough using quotes, and how loud we 12s are at the clink, and how all the Seahawks have to do is, quote unquote, stay healthy. Come on.
Needs a little more in-depth than that.
Exactly.
Well, good. That's what we're here for.
We all know how tough the LOB is. We know we're loud and proud. And for crying out loud, every team needs to stay healthy. So, and then he goes on. Side note, Thomas on punt return scares the heck out of me.
Yes.
I'm pro bubble wrap.
Yes. I love this.
I also look forward to your Do Better at Life than Skip Bayless segments, though it can't be hard to find people better at life than Skip. Exactly our feeling as well, but
that's great.
We enjoy fun.
That's great. Well, thank you for that review and being on my side on the real thing. I appreciate that.
He does say, my only problem with the show is that it's not daily.
Well, my only problem with not doing that is that we're not paid.
Exactly.
We get paid for this, boys and girls. I'll come at you,
every day.
Every day, 3 hours. I don't even care. That's fine.
No, I could do that.
Yeah.
So, and then final review on Stitcher, James 12. Fun and informative podcast. Listen to the first podcast this week from you guys.
Oh, cool.
So
a new listener.
I know.
Well, welcome to the Seahawkers
Nation.
Welcome
to the show.
Yeah. Yep.
And really enjoyed all the points you made, particularly regarding that silly preseason game against the Broncos. So I too, had to listen to the Broncos, and dear Lord, I was ready to destroy my TV. So
yes.
Here's hoping to a great season.
Well, and it's funny, too, that he brought up the Broncos thing. There's been a post that was put on the Facebook page that I've been meaning to mention like the last three episodes, and I always seem to forget it because the computer would freeze on the Facebook page, and I'd never seem to get to it here. So I'm looking here really quick to see if I can find it.
Well, while you're bringing up things that you've been meaning to mention, I've been also meaning to mention a bit of a shout-out to our guy Dave Bloomquist over in Boston.
Oh, yes!
Yes, because... back when we interviewed Jenny Ghost, I mentioned the Ring of Honor and how we should have that.
Yeah.
But it was actually Dave's idea, and I said I felt bad for not bringing up the fact that it was actually Dave's idea. But he mentioned on Twitter, he said at Seahawkers Pod, that's our Twitter account, sitting their groove. I have listened to every single episode. All 12 should # Go Hawks, and so I mentioned the fact that I brought up the Ring of Honor thing, and I did attribute it to him. He said, ha, I wondered about that. I was thinking it was going to morph into your great idea.
Odds are.
No, Dave, that's your idea.
Given proper credit.
I give proper credit.
Okay, so the post I was trying to mention, and I'm sorry, Eric Simon, because I've meant to bring this up for weeks now since you sent it. It was great. So Eric Simon sent this and said, love the podcast, gents. Just listening to the latest show. I was born in Seattle and now live in Denver. I like the Broncos, but obviously root for Seattle first. I have to share this with you. This is from The Drive in Big Al and D-Mac, the fan, at 104.3 there in Denver. And basically, what he posted on there was a little video, and it was the two of them making fun of the Denver Broncos announcers. Like, it's a little parody, and it's actually really funny. So I suggest it's in the other posts, like where you guys can post. I wish we could get it so that it would pop up on the main drag.
I think we can share it. I think we can go back and find it and hit share.
Okay.
To put it up on on the main page.
And then the other thing I think we'll continue to do is we'll always have the most current episode pinned up at the top.
Yeah.
Because I think that's great. So you guys can find that, makes that nice and easy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that there. So anyways, big thanks to Eric Simon. I'm sorry for the delay in getting that read here, man, because that was funny stuff.
So one thing I'm really proud of is the fact that we had a response to your call out of the listeners and into calling into the show.
Yes,
we have.
Yes,
we have voicemails this week, Adam.
I am so stoked. Well done, people, by getting a little courage and getting going. So yeah. So what's our first one here?
So first one I'm going to go with is our guy Hector Mark, who we talked a little bit about on the last show.
Oh, and just so people know too, Hector called in twice. He did his first message. He wasn't happy with it. Called back in, left a second one, and it was much tighter. You can feel free to do that too. We're not gonna be mad if you leave two messages and be like, no, dude, disregard the first one. Man, I stunk. So,
hi guys, Hector here. Love the podcast. Been listening since about week 5 of last season, and have been tuning in ever since. Thanks for including me in last week's bet and winning the first ever pick a player contest. Just my idea for a possible new segment for picking a play or a player and to do well in a particular game. I have a do better for this week, and it is for Adam Emmert. Mm-hmm. Adam, you're always ranting about Twitter and social media and not being on it and people being strange and weird, but have you tried it at all? That's my question. I give you until opening night, when we kick off on opening night, to make a Twitter, even if it means only one post. Yes, it would still count, but at least give it a try. Best of all to you guys, and looking forward to what you have in store for this season. And as always, go Hawks.
Yes. Yes. Hector Mark nailed it. That's exactly what a call should be coming into the show. I love that. Very well done. And a little do better. A caller do better, yeah, which I really like. Now
going after you.
Yeah, he's coming at me. I see you, Hector. I see you out there. All right. So he gives me the challenge. Now, in the previous message, he said try it for 30 days. Okay.
Right.
So, which, look, that's fair. Now, there's one thing that I have to be in life, and that's relatively consistent. So when I tell my daughter she has to try something new and give it a few tries, I better dang well be ready to do that myself. So, Hector Mark, challenge accepted.
Okay, well, and we should probably check in with Hector on this, because you know I have my military Seahawkers Twitter account, and then I have the Seahawkers podcast Twitter account, and I end up doing both,
right?
So that hopefully it's acceptable to Hector that I just hand over the opportunity to post on the Seahawkers podcast Twitter account.
Oh really? I was planning on just making a daily.
Oh, you're gonna make your own? Whatever.
I don't know.
Do.
That's what he said to do.
That is what he said to do. I'm just wondering if that would be.
I don't know. I guess. Well, Hector, let us know.
Well, you know what? You should probably start up your own because I don't want you jacking up our.
You know I will
Seahawkers
too.
Pod Twitter account.
You know I will too. You know I will.
Get a little bit of practice, and then you can work your way into having an account with significantly more followers.
I'm talking about practice.
You need some practice.
No, but what I do want to do is I want to leave it open to the listeners to suggest user names or handles. That would be great. I think to start with, I've thought about going with @AdamTheRant.
There you go. Adam the Rant.
if that is open, if anybody's got a better suggestion, I'm open to it. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm changing my name on the NFL Pick'ems deal to that as well.
Uh-huh.
So last I checked, there was almost 30 people on there already on the NFL Pick'em. So get on the NFL Pick'em, guys. Get signed up. The link is on the Facebook page.
Yeah, and if you need it, it's bit.ly/P, and then lowercase ICK, and then a capital S, capital H, capital P.
Wow, that was from memory.
From memory. It's that easy.
Wow.
I know.
I'm impressed. So, Hector Mark, that was a great call. And like I said, challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. All right. So, and I still haven't mailed Hector's program, so I need to get after that.
Jeez, dude.
And we don't really have any random listener submissions for...
No, we'll have to come up with a structure for that, because I like that idea that Hector brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like find one great prop bet or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. We'll think of something.
Obscure prop bet type things.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I like those. So yeah, we'll come up with that.
And we do have one more call here that I want to play for you. And I was pretty entertained by this because Jason in Miami, he called in. He's called before.
Yes.
And he has
the stones to call twice.
I know.
All right.
I dig it.
Okay.
And he had a based off of our talk on fantasy football, he had an experience with his fantasy draft that he wanted to share with everybody. So here that is.
Hey, guys, it's Jason from Miami. Just finished listening to the last episode, Brandon talking about his fantasy experience, and I thought I would share one with you. I've got a fantasy league that I've been in for like 10 years with some old high school buddies, and as time has passed, it got more and more expensive to buy in each year. I don't know why that is. I can't control it. But anyway, it's getting to the point where I don't tell my wife for fear that she will either kill me or go on a huge shopping spree or both. So I don't tell her what the buy-in is. But it's important to the story because this year we lost a guy, and another guy who's in the league said that he had a friend at work who was a big football fan and would participate, would buy in and participate. So we're all stoked. We go to the draft party, everything's all set up, and this new guy walks in full 49ers regalia, which is very odd for Miami, and the first thing I thought was that my buddies had put him up to it, because obviously they know how much I love the Hawks, and I figured this was some kind of elaborate gag. But it turned out this guy was indeed a 49ers fan, and so very quickly he and I started getting into it, basically ripping apart each other's draft picks. Every time he had a wide receiver that he picked, I'd make a comment like, he's, you know, sorrier than Michael Crabtree, something like that. And we're getting into it. And by the fifth or sixth round, it's getting into mother and sister territory. And it's starting to really affect my concentration, because I'm concentrating more on trying to give him some zingers, than I am on the draft. So I'm wondering how am I either going to have to give up, or I'm going to have to come up with something that will put this guy in place. Well, he hands it to me on a silver platter. With his sixth pick, he actually goes up to the board after talking smack the whole time and picks the Seattle Seahawks defense. Of course, we all erupt, and now all nine of us are giving him flack. And his comment, if you can believe it, was, hey, listen, got a lot of money riding on this. So it just goes to show these Niners fans, when it's put up or shut up time and they got to put their money down, they know who the real team is. And I just enjoy the thought so much that this guy is going to have to root for the Seahawks defense all throughout the year, or at least he's going to have to welcome success, even against the 49ers. And there's no way he can bench that defense. So I thought that Brandon's story reminded me a lot of that. This 49er who's shall remain nameless, although I will tell you that his name starts in D and ends with oosh.
Fantastic. Oh, that was great. I enjoyed that. Even though I'm not a fantasy guy, that was a fantastic story.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah, I think he got the right name in there. When he first said, you know, 49ers fan in Miami, I immediately thought Kaepernick, like, right. But that's a Miami fan in San Francisco. So it's the
exactly
opposite.
Yeah, totally opposite. So, you know what it kind of reminded me of, and Adam, this is a show, if you haven't checked it out, my youngest brother actually put me onto The League. And it's on Netflix.
Somebody else had just brought this up the other day to me. Yeah.
And watched the first two episodes of the first season. I guess they're in their fifth season. But it's about a bunch of guys
who are fantasy league guys.
And the first two episodes were outstanding. So I'm going to be watching that. But it did remind me a little bit about that. So,
yeah.
Thanks to Jason in Miami.
Yeah, no, that was great.
And it also let us know that our time limit on incoming calls is 3 minutes.
Oh, so keep that in mind, people.
Keep that in mind. I think
we'll learn as you learn here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if you do want to call in and leave a message, the number, once again, 253-235-9041. Get that done. And I'm very proud of everybody who called in.
Yeah.
Good work.
Well done. So, one thing I want to bring up before we go into Do Better and Better at Life is, because you kind of called me out a little bit on referring to the pass as the Fail Mary.
Yeah.
And I do try and make it a point to not call it that, because I don't think it was a fail.
No, it was not a fail.
I think the officials got it right.
I think they got the catch part right. I think they got the pass interference wrong
before.
They
got the pass interference wrong.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to complain about Golden Tate pushing off, fine. You're 100% right. They missed that call bigger than life.
They missed that call.
No doubt. But as far as the catch itself is concerned, that is a catch.
Right.
I'm sorry. If you just look at the rules, you look what happened, you look at who had 2 feet on the ground with hands on the ball, it was Golden Tate first.
Well, and I don't even think you have to go as far as the 2 feet, 2 feet on the ground. You can have possession with one hand. We've seen Golden Tate catch the ball with one hand,
right,
and come down in the end zone.
But the act of completing a catch, you have to get your feet down.
You do.
Yeah.
That's correct. But yeah. Everybody points to the fact that the Packers player had both hands on the ball first. But Golden Tate actually had one hand on the ball before the Packers player did.
Did, and he had his second hand up underneath,
right,
in there as well. So you can't even see one way or the other. So if you're going to sit there and tell me that wasn't a catch. Plus, look,
if it were called the other way,
right,
initially,
yeah,
there's nothing that we'd be like,
tough break. That's just it. There's just not enough evidence to overturn the call. So whatever.
In either way, yeah.
The whole fail Mary thing is just really.
It really, yeah.
Grow up, man.
They called it a touchdown for Golden Tate, so that's where I come out on it. So.
Right.
I didn't want you to get the idea that I was
that's a regular part of your vernacular.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Well. Good. Otherwise, I'd have to do better you. But instead,
you don't have to.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm going to do better, Bucky Brooks.
Yeah, Bucky Brooks.
This summer to me, it felt like the year of lists. And
everyone
had a list of something this offseason, trying to rank the worst Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. I think we talked about that one. You know, list of top draft busts, the best offensive line groups in the league, the list of all time Hall of Fame snubs. You know, there were lists for literally everything.
Right.
And I thought that, you know, September 1st rolls around. It's September. We have preseason, you can talk about preseason, what happened during there. You can talk about cuts. You can talk about what happened there. We have all these regular season games coming up that we can talk about. And yet, apparently I was wrong when it came to thinking that our list season was over, because Bucky Brooks of NFL.com just released a list ranking from 1 to 32 the best quarterback/backup quarterback tandems in the league. And I don't even need to get into people fell out, because it doesn't matter.
What a waste of life.
Could you imagine spending like time being paid to write an article about quarterbacks and their backup quarterbacks and
85% of the
ranking them
aren't going to play any sort of significant minutes?
Well, and I look at it and it's like ranking all of the quarterbacks from 1 to 32, except far more confusing.
Yeah.
Because you have to take into account how good their backup is. Like,
yeah.
Like, you might rank Geno Smith at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
But because Mike Vick's his backup, maybe it goes up like 2-3 slots. I don't know.
Right. And how you put all that together and compile it, like, whatever.
There is a Seahawks tie, I guess, because Andrew Luck was ranked number one with Matt Hasselbeck as his backup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good for the Colts, I guess.
Hooray.
I don't know.
Yeah. You won an insignificant list.
Yeah.
Maybe, oh, God. God. It's the silly. I'm so glad the silly season's over.
So, you know, Bucky Brooks.
Do better.
Come on. This is the season for lists is over. Do better.
It's declared. The season for lists is over.
We can power rank now.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Okay. Well, my do better is none other than the San Francisco 49ers defensive end, Ray McDonald. For those of you who are unaware, Ray McDonald got arrested on domestic violence charges on Sunday.
Like the, what, day or day or two after?
3 days.
3 days
three
after
days.
Goodell comes out and with the revised policy on domestic violence.
And all that. So, look, it's already on the forefront of your mind with the Ray Rice thing. And then Goodell comes out with his letter on, what was it? Must have been Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 days later, you're arrested for hitting a woman? What are you thinking?
Well,
number one... Look, I've been...
What are you thinking in the first place?
I'm saying. Like, I've been in some bad situations with gals where they've gotten physical even. Mm-hmm. You know what I never have done? I've never raised my hand. It's absolutely insane. Like, you have to have
You just don't do it.
You just don't do it. Like, it's just not a choice. It's just not a line that you can cross. And trust me, in some of these situations, like, a lot of you would probably say, why didn't you cold cock it? You know, no, you just, there's no reason to ever do that. There's just no reason. So he gets nabbed on that. But that's not the worst part. The worst part is that he's already been arrested for a DUI earlier. Like, I think it was 2011. So he's still trying to figure that out there. Oh, in 2010 in Santa Clara County, he was arrested for a DUI. And he also, the street that he got arrested on for this domestic violence thing, same street Alden Smith got nailed for his DUI. It's on the same street.
On the same street.
So Ray McDonald, for being so tone deaf to the culture that's going on around him right now in this moment, and then also to ever think that it's okay to pick up your hand and smack a woman, do better. The disappointment level is just so off the charts. It's like, you're gigantic. Not only are you a man, which, you know, just on average, you're going to be larger than the average woman. You just are, just on average, statistics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you're a physical freak of a man. You're a defensive end. You are a mini giant. You can't be doing that.
I think, and I may not have this right, but I think she was pregnant too, which even part of the stipulation was that if you used weapons or if the woman were pregnant, then 6 games was the minimum.
Right.
And then if there were any of those other mitigating factors, that it would go even higher. So
right.
Not the thing you want to test, and I mean, not something that you want to do anyway. So
exactly,
watch out.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of parlays into my better at life. So I'll just kind of go with it here real quick. But my better at life is Roger Goodell, because he did come out and release a statement to the teams and change the policy just the ways you described, where the enforcement is stiffer. The second time that you are nailed for a domestic violence charge, you are banned from the league. I think that's great. When you talk about before, you were saying, well, Josh Gordon gets nailed for weed 2-3 times, and now he's out a year, and yet Ray Rice gets 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the inconsistency there. Now, what I also applaud Roger Goodell for is, in the letter, he said flat, we got it wrong.
Yeah.
We got it wrong. And I think that's a huge deal to come out and say, look, you're right. You're right. Looking back on this, we did not handle this the way that it ought to have been handled. And so going forward, we're going to make a better stand about that. And they're also, it sounds like they're going to do more things with counseling and things like that, and allowing more resources for players that are at risk for committing domestic violence or being a recipient of it. Because believe it or not, there are guys that get beat around. Like, that happens.
Oh, it happens, for
but
sure.
Nobody will talk about that ever. But no, just the fact that they're taking a stand on it, and really doing the right thing. If you're going to be tough, then be tough all the way around. Mm-hmm. And I applaud Roger Goodell for being able to admit he's wrong. I think that's something we haven't seen from him before. I think that's a big growth step for him as a commissioner.
Sure.
I'm just really happy about the whole thing.
And he was. I mean, after the whole Ray Rice thing happened,
pathetic.
Yeah, it was bad, and they did get it wrong. And so it was good to see them act relatively quickly. You know, depending on, like you said, depending on the circumstances, 6 games even seems low. But it is a starting point, and maybe with help, some of these players can, get better if it is, because it is a problem.
It is
and giving the resources to work against that type of thing.
Just all the right steps, the best that you can as an organization to guard against human beings being human beings. So,
right.
I applaud him. So, Roger Goodell, you are my better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well done. My better at life, I actually went back a few weeks because this was one that I had on my radar, and it slipped through, but having a hard time finding one this week. And yeah. Because it has been a little bit of a short week, but also
a slow news week, a slow everything week.
A little bit slow. Yeah. So I went back, and this was a really good story, and I had to bring it up. My better at life is Chase Palmer. And if you hadn't heard the name, he's a 14-year-old freshman in Spokane at East Valley High School, and he has cystic fibrosis.
Oh, okay. Same thing as Boomer Esiason's son.
So he was in the Make-A-Wish program, or he is in the Make-A-Wish program, and his wish was to be at the Seahawks facility and get to meet some of his favorite players.
Oh, cool.
And so he got to tour the VMAC, have lunch in the cafeteria, and got to meet Russell Wilson and Earl Thomas and Marshawn Lynch. So
awesome.
And they had lots of good things for him. I think it was Earl Thomas that maybe gave him a hug a little bit too hard.
No.
And he felt really bad about it. Earl Thomas. Okay. And so
he's just intense, man.
Yeah. Well, and he had a really good point. He said, you know, a kid like this has got to be super tough, and I was just a little bit too yeah. hard on him, but yeah. You know, what a tough kid. I mean, yeah. going through
that's a gnarly disease, man.
Yeah, so I did want to bring that up. Seahawks, you know, they've done some Make-A-Wish things in the past, and so I was really glad to see that.
You bet.
What a great program. And Chase Palmer, you're better at life than Skip Bayless.
You betcha. Well, cool. Well, that kind of gets us to the end of the show. I want to just throw out the email, since we didn't do that throughout the whole show.
Sure.
It's gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. Feel free to email in.
Yep.
John Davidson, I did see your email, you know, thanking us for having you on last week. It was our pleasure. There was a few folks that enjoyed the interview that had written in on the Facebook page.
Yeah, we got lots of good feedback
like that.
On that
interview. Actually quite a bit. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. A fellow named Sven. I hope I pronounced it right, made a funny comment, or just an interesting comment, saying that, yeah, a lot of us over here in Europe, we got to know the NFL through the Armed Forces Network. So,
yep.
So that was pretty neat for all that to come together. But so that's the email. We've given you the number to call the show, 253-235-9041. You can check us out on Facebook,
facebook.com/Seahawkers Podcast.
You can do the Twitter thing, which apparently I'm going to be doing. Don't forget to give me suggestions for a handle. I'm looking at you, Eric Spies. Look at these TDs. Because that's pretty good. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Spies has some creativity in him, so he might be able to come up with a good username for
it. Exactly. So, yeah, I think with everything there, there's only one thing left to say.
See, it is harder.
Oh, that was the first time I screwed that up in a long time.
It got me every week.
Well, with that, there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.